One of 214 bills passed by the State Assembly and awaiting votes in the State Senate would regulate direct primary health care. But what exactly is that? Thanks to the chief assembly sponsor of the bill, Republican Representative Joe Sanfilippo of New Berlin, who represents the 15th District, and Dr. Suzanne Gale, a former president and current board member of the Wisconsin Academy of Family Physicians, for joining us to discuss direct primary care. Thank you both very much.
Invitation.
Well, doctor, can you start? Give us an overview of, it sounds like a change in practicing medicine models. Can you just summarize it, please?
Yes. Direct primary care is a very different way of practicing medicine and receiving medicine. What it is it's a direct connection between patients and their physician. In the fee-for-service model, patients call a clinic, they talk to a receptionist, they make an appointment, they get in whenever they can get an appointment, and the physician is seeing a large volume of patients and then billing insurance companies, and there's a whole level of administrative people helping to make the system function. In direct primary care, a physician has a much lower panel of patients, a much lower volume. So instead of 2,000 to 3,000 patients that a family physician would normally have, they would have 500, 600 patients. And those patients have a direct connection to their physician via cell phone, text messaging, emails, even webcam visits. You get same day or next day appointments for urgent needs. And you get long appointments, a minimum of 30 minutes, and physical exams are typically an hour to an hour and a half long. There's never a copay when you come in to see your physician because you actually sign up with a monthly membership fee. And that membership allows you that access to your physician, and it actually ends up lowering costs quite a bit, too. We provide labs at a 90 to 95% discount that we can draw in the clinic, send out to a lab. We also dispense generic medications, 30 to 50 commonly prescribed medications at a significant discount. So that gets billed, the labs and the medications get billed on top of that monthly membership fee. But by having that unparalleled access and the cost savings, it actually makes people seek out medical care much sooner when problems are little problems and not big problems, which helps save money for everyone overall. It also helps allow for doing a lot of prevention and wellness visits and goal setting so that people improve their health. They don't just put out fires as they come along. They actually live healthier lives.
And you practice where?
I practice in Delafield, Wisconsin.
In Delafield. And your clinic is now 100% direct primary care?
Yes, it is.
And have you gone to the direct primary care model recently or a year or two or how long?
I've actually been doing it for over 6 years total. Before I was working independently, I worked for a company that provided these services to corporations.
Okay. And Representative, thanks for your patience. How did you get involved in what's the bill number? AB 798 pending
right.
in the Senate?
Right. So this all kind of started two sessions ago. One of our summer projects for our office is we started looking at ways that we could introduce new types of practices into the Medicaid program that would control the ongoing costs for Medicaid and increase patient health care. So we ran across direct primary care and took a look at it, and once we spent a lot of time really learning how it went, we thought, hey, this would be great for everybody, not just for Medicaid. So I toured a clinic that is in my district in New Berlin and took a look firsthand at what direct primary care had to offer, and then we ran across Dr. Gale, who has just been immensely helpful in teaching us all about this. And just the more that we studied and found out just the savings that people could achieve and the fact that they get so much better, more personalized care. It just seemed like a win-win situation all the way around. So Senator Kapinga and I put the bill forth this session, and we were happy to have it passed.
Talk about the savings, because if I sign up for direct primary care with your clinic in Delafield, I'm paying a monthly fee, mm-hmm. correct?
Correct.
But that's in addition to my health insurance, because the bill explicitly says this is not health insurance. So can you talk about the financing arrangement for a person or a family?
So let's say a young, healthy person. has health insurance, and yes, you do need to have some kind of health insurance in addition to direct primary care, because this is a health care service, not an insurance entity.
Right.
And so let's say a young healthy woman has a sore throat and she goes into an urgent care center. She has insurance, she pays her $60 copay to go into the urgent care center, and then she gets a bill for the physician visit, the rapid strep test, the throat culture. If the rapid strep test was negative, she has to go to the next phase of testing. So all said and done, at the end of that visit, it's a $240 bill, which she has to pay because she has not yet met her deductible for the year.
And this is under the managed care fee-for-service system, correct?
This is not under...
The systems in place at your practice.
Correct.
I'm just
trying
to clarify.
This is like a fee-for-service system, correct.
Okay, excuse me.
So had she come to my clinic, she would have been a young adult in the age range of 20 to 44, pays $50 per month for their membership. She would have come to my practice. She wouldn't have paid a copay because her membership was paying for these services, this access. She would have had a rapid strep test done for free. Had that been negative, we would have sent out a throat culture, and that would have been billed at about $6 to $8 rather than $40 to $60. And then she would have, if the suspicion was really high that she had strep throat, she would have walked out of the clinic with a prescription for an antibiotic for under $2. And so the same that she paid for an urgent care visit for one sore throat, she could have paid for 5 months of comprehensive health care at my clinic. And so it does pay off to be a membership of this type of clinic.
Representative, your February 9th newsletter on the subject said, direct primary care patients are 52% less likely to require hospitalization than patients under a traditional model. 52%?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think, as Dr. Gale mentioned before, people right now, even when you have traditional health insurance, a lot of people are apprehensive to go to take a look at small issues because they can't afford the deductible and the copay. So they wait, and then all of a sudden a small issue turns into a big one. With direct primary care, we see just the opposite. Because you don't have to worry about copays and deductibles, you have greater access with your physician and a more personal line of care, that you're being able to take care of these issues before they balloon out of control and end up in very expensive hospital situations.
Well, pardon my lack of knowledge here, but my question is, if I have to pay $50, $60 for direct primary care, say at your clinic, mm-hmm. and then I also have to buy health insurance, wouldn't this amount to raising my cost of health care? Help me understand this.
It actually pairs very well with high deductible health care coverage.
Oh, the catastrophic plans?
Excuse me for interrupting. It carries very well with that because most of the times you don't need catastrophic health care, but you need to have that insurance just in case. Bankrupt, the number one cause of going bankrupt in this country is because of health care costs. Mm-hmm. And so if you pair really comprehensive, quality, accessible primary care with the catastrophic plan, which is less expensive than a lot of the other types of insurance, that's where you really see a great savings. Now, if you have like a typical fee-for-service HMO-type plan, it still pairs well because that extra expense ends up saving, the membership expense ends up saving you so much more money in the long run because of the access, rapid health care, and low-cost labs and medications. What I have seen is that people never even end up meeting their deductible because they're getting all of their services for the membership cost at such a discount from what their deductible is.
So this is going back to your February newsletter. So it's not health insurance, but if you just have to buy catastrophic insurance, that's the savings, Representative?
That's correct. Because, you know, if we take a look at where health insurance rates have gone over the last few years, we've seen just an explosion in the growth of premiums, right? And in fact, the average in Wisconsin for an individual plan was a 36% increase this year. And in some counties, we've seen a 100% increase.
Was that 36% increase for the 216,000 that have to buy?
On the individual markets,
yes.
So those are people
through the Affordable Care Act.
or even on their own. I mean, they might buy it commercially as well, but these are people buying an individual plan.
36%, yes.
But we've also seen the trend, even in employer group health plans, to go towards higher deductibles as well, just because, you know, to bring those premiums under control. I mean, people don't have much of an option. So if you have a plan with a $5,000 or a $10,000 deductible, which sadly is becoming more of the norm than it used to be, you're in a much better position if you contract with Dr. Gale or somebody like her, because for, you know, $600, $700, $800 for the year, even if it's $1,000 a year, if you can get 90% of your health care done in that setting, you're not paying those deductibles and co-pays. And it's similar to, you know, years ago we created HSAs with along these same kind of concepts.
Health savings account, yeah.
But the problem again with that is, because I had an HSA when before I was in the legislature and had my own business, but then you still have that apprehension, because when you're paying out of pocket, you tend not to go and take care of these little things that could be taken care of in a primary care setting until they get out of control. So it's the money savings is key here, but I think probably as important, if not more important, is the fact that people are getting better health care.
As you've seen the figures, as Wisconsin ages, is direct primary care a viable option for someone who qualifies for Medicare and who looks at a Advantage plan now or something, or is it more beneficial to younger people and younger families, Doctor?
Oh no, it's an advantage to all ages, and I do see as our population is aging where this is going to become even more and more valuable. For instance, I do take care of people that are 65 and older, and as far as the rates are concerned, you know, we do have a gradation of rates depending upon age range.
And is it also based on past medical history?
Not at all.
Not at all. Excuse me for interrupting.
But if someone is homebound or in a nursing home, we do talk about, you know, the fee based upon what their needs are. With having a smaller panel, that enables me to do home visits much, much easier than I was ever able to do in my earlier years, although I've done them my whole career. Now, because I have fewer patients, I know my patients so well, I have the time and the ability to go out to nursing homes or their household and see them whenever they need to be seen.
So, and your personal patient caseload is how many now, Doctor?
I just started my individual practice in October, so I am not up to my capacity yet.
Okay.
Excuse me. Yeah, it's coming.
Joe, let's talk about the capital process. If clinics like Dr. Gale's are now doing this, why do you need AB 78 if it's already legal?
Sure. The problem was we didn't know, I don't want to say we didn't know it was legal, but statute was completely silent on direct primary care operations, right? We didn't know how they were determined, whether it's health insurance, whether it's health care. So it's very important for us to put this down in statute so that physicians like Dr. Gale know going forward that as issues arise, these are the laws that we're held to, and this is what we follow. That's why you see this trend happening all around the country with 23 other states right now having put direct primary care laws on their books. The federal government is looking at doing this as well, because we're recognizing that this is a very viable practice, and we need to be able to just codify it in statute. So we're more or less recognizing that it's there. It'll make more physicians at ease to get into these types of situations, and it'll make patients feel the same way at ease getting into these types of situations as well. So we want to be able to expand it.
Have your fellow physicians said we'd be more interested in this if there was clarifying statutes such as he's advocating?
Yes. I think that right now it's kind of a new thing, and I think as we get it more and more established and well-known and validated with legislation, I think that absolutely helps more physicians branch into this line of work.
Joe, let me ask you about the Legislative Council's summary of the amendment that is now pending in the Senate. Just three sentences. It defines the primary care as a contract in which the health care provider agrees to provide routine health services such as screening, assessment, diagnosis, and treatment to promote health or the detection and management of disease and injury. But here's what intrigues me. A valid direct primary care agreement outside of the MA program must state that the agreement is not health insurance, number one, and that the agreement alone may not satisfy individual or employer insurance coverage requirements under federal law. I don't understand that last phrase. Why is that critical? Would it not meet the requirements of the Affordable Care Act? Is that what it clarifies?
Well, this is not health insurance. Direct okay. primary care is not health insurance, and so if you choose to contract with a physician under this type of a membership agreement, you cannot say, okay, I have health insurance, because it's not. It is not meant to be health insurance. It's a service. And so this clarifies that you do still need to have health insurance, and the direct primary care physician needs to communicate that clearly to the patients so that there's no misunderstanding.
And if I'm interested in getting direct primary care through you or another clinic, who's going to advise me in terms of how much catastrophic insurance to buy? Or there'll be a tendency, I assume, to try to sell me my current health insurance, maybe through my employer. How could someone get advice in terms of balancing direct primary care and catastrophic insurance? Any thoughts on that?
So that's one of the reasons why we put the consumer protections in the bill, right? We wanted to make sure that people were aware of exactly what these services, what they can expect out of this type of a service and what they shouldn't expect. But it's important to note that every single physician that I have spoken with throughout this process, and between the hearings and the private interviews I've done, it's been over more than a dozen from all around the country. Every single one of those physicians said that one of the first things that they discuss when a new patient comes into their clinic is the fact that this isn't insurance and that they need to have those that insurance in place for those catastrophic conditions. But again, as Dr. Gale mentioned, a lot of times people don't get there because one of the things that I learned, which I was surprised to learn throughout this process, is that 80 to 90% of a person's health care can be covered in a primary care setting. I mean, that's a remarkable amount. I mean, when you think about that, rarely would we need to go see a specialist or end up in an inpatient situation. And so if we can get all of the care we need, even if we have chronic diseases, they're kept much better under control by having a personal relationship with a doctor that can see you for 30 or 60 minutes as opposed to 7.
Yes.
You know, and these physicians, they get into the field because they want to take care of people and help them. They don't want to become pencil pushers and spend the majority of their time pushing paperwork. But with the legacy healthcare system we have in place in the country right now, that's precisely what happens. There's more time spent on paperwork than there is face-to-face when taking care of the patient.
Can health insurance companies in Wisconsin offer direct primary care now? Do any do that?
Not that I know of.
And why not, if it would achieve some savings and help their patients better?
I don't know the answer.
The marketplace?
So, as you can imagine, I've had plenty of discussions with health insurance companies throughout this process, right?
As opposed to doctor.
And you know, any insurance company is very risk adverse. So whenever you talk about making a change, even if it's a slight change, you know, they're just very apprehensive because it's a delicate balancing act that they play to be able to take in enough premium to cover all of the expenses that they have. But my conversations with these insurance companies all along has been, if you can take care of 80 to 90% of a person's health care for a fixed dollar amount every month, I would think that as an insurance company, you would jump at that opportunity to be able to do that because you can spend in one visit a whole year's worth of premium, what you're going to pay to Dr. Gale. So as an insurer, if you want to control risk, I would be looking right now at ways where I could incorporate that into my policies to control costs, because insurance is all about one thing, controlling costs.
Well, a follow-up, Joe, which I think you can answer. Anthem is against it. The Wisconsin Association of Health Plans is against it. And the following groups have taken no positions on your bill: the Wisconsin Hospital Association, Wisconsin Medical Society, Children's Hospital, SSM Health, and United Healthcare. Why no position on the bill if it's a win-win? Please.
Again, I think it's just this apprehension to go into something new. The legacy health care system that we have in place in this country has been there for a long time. And so it's what we have, what's what we're all accustomed to, it's what we've all relied on. But when you stop to think about it, it really doesn't make much sense. If I go to a doctor for something that's ailing me, I don't know how much it's going to cost, if they refer me to a specialist, if I have to get tests done or scans or anything like that. And then, you know, a month or 6 weeks later, once I get the bill for my doctor visit, I need to go see the doctor again because I'm in cardiac arrest from looking at how much I have to pay. And this is even under conditions when people have traditional health care and health insurance under our typical legacy system. So it's time for us to step back and take a look and say, the way we're doing this is not best. We're putting all the emphasis on just cost, and we should be putting emphasis on patient care first. These types of contracts do just that.
Doctor, do you want to offer a theory on why these groups are neutral, these major groups are neutral?
I think there's fear of the unknown.
And so my follow-up question is, if 23 states have it, has this become increasingly popular in those 23 states? Mm-hmm. And wouldn't some of these associations that are neutral on the bill have talked to their peers in the other states and been converted?
Take a look at Wisconsin in leading the way in managed health care. We have been a leader around the country in the managed health care model. We have been doing that for many, many years here in Wisconsin. It has just now, within the last 5 years to 8 years, starting to take hold in other parts of the state. And again, it's just because insurance companies are very risk adverse. They're very slow to adapt and make changes. And I think that as these contracts become more prevalent and the benefits are more widely known, we're going to see them slowly migrating into backing these types of plans and actually getting involved with them and themselves.
Does direct primary care threaten their profits, Joe?
No, I think it helps control their profits, right? Because if you're going to provide all of this host of services that Dr. Gale is going to provide mm-hmm. for a fixed fee every month, that's the easiest way for me to bake that into the cake when I'm figuring out how much premium I need to charge somebody. If I know that 80% of their health care is covered for X number of dollars a month, why wouldn't I jump on that? We all want fixed costs, right? I mean, that's why cell phone bills have gone away from charging by the minutes for phone calls and texts, right? Because we want to know, we want surety. We want to know that every month I'm paying this amount. So whether I'm the direct consumer or I'm the health insurance company, why would I not want to know that and control that cost?
Dr. Gale, does a direct primary care model work best in the suburbs? Is it also achievable in our rural areas, some of our medically underserved areas? Mm-hmm. And what about the inner cities with poverty issues? Mm-hmm. Is it a model for all three of those settings?
Absolutely, it is. And I know another direct primary care physician, Dr. Bondo, has been seeing people from the inner city of Milwaukee who are on medical assistance, who also pay the membership and drive out to Delafield, a 25-minute drive, because they have realized the incredible cost savings and value and personal attention that they are receiving. So it does work for the very urban, it does work in suburban, it works in rural, it's for everybody.
That's fascinating. Are you seeing any patients who are on MA coming and signing up for your clinic?
I do not have any MA patients that are seeing me. I have one uninsured patient who I'm working very hard to help get insurance of some type. And for him, we're actually working towards the health sharing ministries. There are some different agencies out there that are not insurance, but they help share the expense of catastrophic medical events. There's organizations such as Liberty Health Share that is much less expensive for catastrophic health care needs for people that can help meet that gap.
One in five Wisconsin residents, as you're both aware, get their health care through their Medicaid program. Now, part of this bill sets up a pilot program. Can you fill in the details on that?
Sure. So that was one of the great things with working Senator Capping on this bill is he being a CPA, he's really good with numbers. So we took a look at this to figure out, you know, is there a way that we can work this into the Medicaid program? Because as we know, our problem isn't paying for Medicaid for the existing program. It's always the growth in the program year after year. In fact, since Governor Walker has been governor, I think we've put in over $3 to $4 billion additional into Medicaid program. And that's basically, you know, we haven't expanded a lot of new programs. That's just our cost. That's the growth in the program. So what we call for in the bill is putting together a working group of people from, you know, that are involved, the boots on the ground, I like to say. So it'll be physicians, it'll be DHS, it would be health insurers, it would be hospital systems and physician groups to be able to say, what's the best way for us to work this into the Medicaid program, and then let's create a pilot and try it out and see if it works. Because if we can connect the folks in Medicaid, and there are a number of them who don't do the primary care, again, the way they should, even though they have, you know, maybe greater access than other people, for just a variety of reasons, they're not able to take care of themselves through primary care. If we can expand that, we're going to drive down overall costs in the program as well while we're increasing the health for those individuals.
As a board member of the Academy of Family Physicians, are Wisconsin's family physicians becoming more interested in direct primary care, doctor?
Absolutely.
And they're saying pass this bill and we'll become even more interested?
Well, they're not saying specifically pass the bill and we'll be more interested, because some of them are not aware of the bill, although it's gotten a lot more publication recently, and there's a grassroots movement right now going on to help the family physicians reach out to their representatives to vote for the bill. The Wisconsin Academy of Family Physicians does support this bill wholeheartedly,
yes. Right.
And so does the American Academy of Family Physicians, is very supportive of direct primary care. So this is growing. It's in evolution here, and I think that it's going to continue to gain a lot of momentum.
Where does this discussion fall into the backdrop of the national debate over getting rid of the Affordable Care Act and the individual mandate and all the potential changes to the healthcare industry? Are you concerned that some of those changes would hurt the ability to offer direct primary care, or do you think it might help it?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I'm
our national debate over healthcare.
I'm still waiting to see the effects of the recent tax laws, and I'm not sure the overall impact of all of the national momentum here and the legislation. But I believe my overall impression is that it is still moving in a very positive direction for direct primary care.
Part of the national debate, of course, led by Senator Sanders, is advocating for a universal health care system. Mm-hmm. What's your position on that?
I think that it is our right and responsibility to care for our people in our communities, our families, our loved ones, our neighbors, and I think that any way that we can do that in a very quality, cost-conscious way is a good thing.
And we've seen the damage that a universal health insurance plan has had on citizens in our country, right? It's driven up costs. So, you know, regardless
of what... You're talking about the 36% bump, right, in premiums? Excuse me.
Yeah. Regardless of what your opinion is on the Affordable Care Act, we know two things. First, that it has driven up the cost of insurance premiums greatly and to the point where a lot of people can't afford them. The other thing is a good thing that it did, and it expanded coverage to people who didn't have it before. So that's a good thing. So we want to fix the bad problem. We want to be able to control the cost. But nobody wants to see us go back to a situation where we have people with less options for care. Direct primary care is just another option that somebody has to be able to take care of themselves and their families without having to break the bank.
Now let's go back to the nuts and bolts of the Capitol. Your bill is one of 214,
yes,
passed by the Assembly, pending in the Senate. The Senate says they're coming back one day, March 20th. Do you have assurances that your bill will be voted on by the Senate?
Well, we never have assurances, but we have very broad support in the Senate for the bill. I think that we look at health care as like the number one polling issue in the state right now, affordable health care for folks. So to me, this is a great way for us to be able to advance those options. We're giving people increased access at affordable rates. And so this is really a free market approach to kind of solve a problem that, I mean, let's face it, the federal government kind of messed up, right, with the insurance and with the Affordable Care Act. So I am very hopeful and optimistic. I think that the Senate will see the importance of this bill and really all of the great benefits it has to offer to our citizens, and that they'll pass it in their last day and get it off to the
governor. And if the Senate does, you have an understanding and agreement with the governor to sign it into law?
I think Governor Walker's made it clear that his priority is increasing access to health care for people in the state and keeping the prices affordable. We know that just based on things he's proposed himself. himself. So I haven't had any direct conversations with the governor on this, but I am sure that this is a concept that he would be able to support. He will happily sign.
One final question. If someone wanted to get more information on direct primary care, is there a common source they could go to? Any thoughts?
Actually, nationwide, there's a website called dpcfrontier.com, and it has...
One more time.
dpcfrontier.com.
Right.
And that has a map for DPC practices all over the country. And so you can click on Wisconsin, and you can identify the names, addresses, phone numbers of any direct primary care organization in the state.
Thank you. Dr. Susan Gale, Representative Joe Sanfilippo, thanks very much about an issue that you hope becomes law very soon.
Absolutely.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.